Ladies and gentlemen, drivers, gig workers, and everyone in between, welcome to This Week in Rideshare Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Hoffa. It is Friday, April 19th, yes, and this week, a $44 million are awarded, riders get checked, and robo-taxis get confused. Legal Rideshare breaks it down. And from Legal Rideshare, I'm joined by the co-founder and lead attorney, Brian Green. Brian, happy Friday.
Happy Friday the 19th, Jared.
I struggled there for a second. We're talking about robo-taxis getting confused. I got confused. I forgot what day it was.
I know. I think AI probably could have done that a little better, the opening.
I could have just got ChatGPT to do it for me. Unbelievable. So some interesting topics this week. Some stuff we've already discussed, we thought we would talk about. And then obviously, we're starting out with some really unfortunate news, but you're part of it, so I wanted you to weigh in, obviously, and explain what's going on. So we're gonna jump right into it, and this is regards to the $44 million lawsuit for a wrongful death. So the family of a murdered Lyft driver has been rewarded $44 million, and this is initially reported by Chicago Sun-Times, and they reported, quote, Christian Philpotts, 29, accepted a request for a ride in Urbana on January 12th of 2022. During the ride, they were shot by the passenger, Ty John Williams of Champaign, according to the criminal charges. Williams was 18, is accused of requesting the ride using his mother's account. He allegedly got inside the vehicle with two other people, pulled out the gun, and shot the driver. The driver died shortly thereafter. Now, the Champaign County Circuit Court judge awarded the family $44 million at a hearing on damages Friday. The family now will seek to collect on that reward from Williams and his mother. And you were quoted as saying criminals must be held accountable when they destroy lives, families, and communities. So, I mean, this is an extremely tragic situation. And also what I understand, this is almost a first in the fact of what the judge awarded, correct?
Yeah, so I want to break down exactly what this award was. Obviously, this was a terrible situation in which Christian was killed just in his line of work. He's a vibrant young man who had a really incredible future ahead of him. We had his family come in, his friends, his mentors, to testify about who Christian was, his passion for the community, his passion for, in his case, protecting animals. He wanted to be a veterinarian. And then this just senseless act. So his passenger allegedly, pulled a gun out, shot him, and that resulted in his passing. Criminal charges are still pending. And in this civil case, we filed suit against the passenger and his mother. The passenger obviously can be held responsible for the act of pulling the gun, shooting Christian, and the mother can be held responsible because when the shooter was committed the crime, he was under 18. And in Illinois, there's a parental responsibility law that says parents can be held monetarily responsible for their minor children's wrongful acts. We found this to be a very important case to pursue. One, because Christian, deserved to live a full life. His family was robbed of a full life and in the comfort of having Christian for many, many years, into the future. And second, we wanted to make sure that justice was served. People who commit crimes against anybody need to be held responsible. And when the parents have the opportunity to step in and correct behavior and prevent these tragedies from occurring, they should be held responsible also. So I want to be very clear. This was a judgment that was against the shooter and his mother. And we feel very strongly that we should seek collection and that we should seek responsibility. And we want to hold everybody who was involved in this crime accountable for it.
Yeah, we hear about, it's just insane, it's insanely tragic. And we hear about these stories all the time. A lot of times it's a carjacking or an assault or a shooting, but it's always different when there's a loss of life, and it's something so traumatic that we see it and we know it can be prevented, and it keeps happening. And the second story we're going to talk about hopefully is going to start touching on this. But I mean, it even says that he was using his mother's account. So again, it's this whole verification process where drivers don't even know who's getting in the car. And I mean, these are simple things to solve. And it's just really devastating that this is what it comes to over and over again. It's like a broken record.
Yeah. You know, why don't we jump to the second story and talk about what's going on there?
Yeah, sure. So as I just mentioned about rider verification, which is, you know, maybe too little too late, but it's happening. So rider verification is going to be happening in 12 cities, including Chicago. ABC7 Chicago reported on this first. So they said, quote, riders will now be verified to make sure they are who they claim to be. Uber said this in response to security and safety concerns that drivers have in Chicago and other cities. Uber says most people will automatically get verified without doing a thing. Uber will cross-reference personal information that they already have in your account, no ID required. That completes the verification process for the vast majority of people. However, the verification process is a pilot program. It will not perform criminal background checks on riders. So, Brian, I just want you to weigh in on this. I think it's a good step forward, but where the hell has this been is my question.
Yeah. You know, as you said, this is a positive step. The verification is important. We want to make sure that safe passengers are paired with safe drivers, and that's a two-way street. Everybody should have responsibility and accountability. And Uber in this case is taking a positive step forward to try to hold riders accountable. You know, as you mentioned, this doesn't seem like it would have been that hard to put in place years ago. I am glad to see that it's happening. I think there's been a lot of people who have been victimized because there's been a lack of transparency, a lack of motivation by the companies to verify, you know, passengers and customers. And it's about time that drivers have this sense of you know, accountability and can feel protected in this way. So I'm glad to see that the companies are stepping up. I'm sad to hear that it, you know, it's taken this long, but looking forward, I think this is a positive step.
Yeah, it obviously is. And I hope, you know, the thing is they're saying, hey, this is a pilot program and it's only in 12 cities. I really hope they establish this and put this into place. It's obvious riders or drivers have been asking for this for literally years. You know, this, in some cases, this is more important and more crucial than some of the other issues they have with the company, because it's not just their livelihood. It's literally their life. I will see when they roll this out. Obviously I hope I'm part of it so I can talk about it and see what it's like, 'cause I often use Uber and Lyft. But I just hope they implement it. I hope whatever it takes to implement it, it happens. I hope they don't make some excuse about driver privacy. I think they're notorious for that. They blame the passenger a lot for reasons they don't do things.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I think this is combating is the obvious. So we hear from drivers all the time that they get ride requests from like Mickey Mouse. And obviously that is somebody trying to conceal their identity. What we want to do is we want to flesh out who is legitimate on the app, who is verified as a real person who can be tracked, who, like, you know, for instance, has a credit card number that if something goes wrong, we can figure out who this person is, has some sort of identifying, you know, ID, whether it's a state ID, a driver's license. Just like, it's not crazy to me to think that if you're going to be putting strangers in cars together, that you can identify who those people are. We're not asking for you know, extensive background checks on every person who uses the app. We're not asking for an invasion of privacy. We're just asking for identification. If something goes wrong in the car, can you be identified? Can you be found? And that goes for accountability if something does happen. And it also goes for deterrence. If you know that your identity is on the app and you can be located, you're probably less likely to commit some sort of violent crime, to defraud someone, to steal, whatever. It's a deterrence, and that's going to make everyone safer as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like this. It's like you can't even sign up for a Netflix account, a free Netflix trial, without your name and some information about you. And that's just the streaming provider. You know, you're not jumping in a car with someone. So yeah, this needs to stay, and hopefully it does. As always, you know, we'll be following the progress of this, and I'm sure it'll be updated weekly, like most of these things are. And speaking of updating weekly, I think this is very interesting, Bryant. I feel like every time we bring this stuff up, the next week, I don't know if TechCrunch is following us or what, but every time we bring up things about robo-taxis or autonomous vehicles, literally the next week, it's like an updated article about what we discussed. And this one is Waymo taxis block traffic. The one thing we had a lot of questions about. So traffic cones cause some confusions for robo-taxis. And this is, again, from TechCrunch. And they reported, quote, 6 Waymo robo-taxis block traffic moving onto the Potero Avenue 101 on-ramp in San Francisco on Tuesday at 9:30 p.m., according to video of the incident posted to Reddit and then eventually confirmation from Waymo. After hitting the road closure, the first Waymo vehicle in the lineup then pulled over out of the traffic lane that was blocked by cones, followed by 6 other Waymo robo-taxis. Human-driven cars were then stuck behind some of the robo-taxis, and a video online posted shows that fed-up drivers were getting out of their cars to physically move the cones out of the way so they could pass both the road closure and the stalled Waymo. So clearly, Bryant, we literally just last week talked about how this is not, we don't think this is ready for prime time. And, you know, some cones in the road turn into a traffic jam.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just one of those things where we, you know, we are seeing that it's not ready to be part of our everyday life. Obviously, at Legal Rideshare, we're mostly concerned with safety. We want to make sure that people on the roads are protected, people who get in these robo taxis are safe. But this is just one more example of the ways in which the technology is not there. If these cars are going to be on the streets, they can't be interfering with our daily activities, our daily traffic. We are not the guinea pigs. Our city streets should not be the guinea pigs for these companies to make billions of dollars, to work out the kinks in their technology. There's plenty of space. Go to the desert. Go set up some fake city somewhere where you can put all of these different roadblocks, for lack of a better word, in front of the taxi and work it out. But when it comes to our neighborhoods, when it puts our lives at risk, our safety at risk, or even just our convenience at risk, that's a problem. I want to see regulators, lawmakers step in to ensure that these things are ready before they come in to our communities and onto our streets.
Yeah, and they even said in the article, which we know because we've discussed it, you know, they said this isn't the first time that there's been, you know, a Waymo or autonomous vehicle blocking the road, but this is the first time that it's been a major highway or freeway. And that changes the game. You know, it's different when you block a side street or we talked about they put a cone on one of the cars and, hey, that's kind of funny and it blocked a little corner. I mean, when you're just blocking a freeway, it's not just that, oh, they're creating unnecessary traffic jams. As you know, as a personal injury attorney, an unexpected traffic jam on a freeway that's open leads to rear ends at 60, 80 miles an hour. And right. So this is this becomes a major issue where it's not just, oh, that's funny or whatever. It becomes a serious health hazard. And, you know, all they said is, you know, their response to this was, hey, we fix it within 30 minutes. It's 30 minutes. And that also doesn't include the people who were helping before Waymo got there.
Right. I think that's a really good point about the safety and, you know, sudden stops cause traffic accidents. And, you know, you could think of this as analogous to a sudden weather condition. If all of the sudden the traffic ahead of you is stopping for no reason, there's going to be repercussions and people will get hurt. And, you know, we're talking about the immediate cause of a health condition, a safety condition, a rear end accident. But you can think even a little broader and say, what if there was an ambulance helping somebody who was having a heart attack get to the hospital and all of a sudden they're stuck in traffic that didn't need to be stopped? So there are all sorts of repercussions to this. And human drivers are, you know, bad enough. We don't need robots contributing to the, you know, the hazards on the road. Until the robots are ready, until they're not going to be making traffic worse and safety worse, they need to be off the road.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, again, they're not, all Waymo said is, hey, we handled it. So they're not saying they're changing anything. And, you know, we'll see. The city might clap back after this because of what happened. You know, I feel like every week we discuss this, there's a new development. So I'm sure next week we're going to have another explanation of what is happening in San Francisco and the robo-taxis. But that is our articles this week. But Brian, I'll give you the final word until we head off into the weekend.
Yeah, I always like to remind everybody that Legal Rideshare is available for free consultations if you ever find yourself in an accident or injured on the job. Consultations are always free, meaning you can talk to us on the phone. We can help you understand what you're entitled to, understand how to set up an insurance claim, how to protect your interests if you've lost wages, have medical bills, pain and suffering, any other damage that you sustain. LegalRideshare.com is the best way to find all of our contact information and to get a hold of us.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. And as I like to say, that is the end of this week in Rideshare.
See you next week.